Hello, ladies and germs. Welcome to another edition of Movie Moan, your TMT podcast. I am your never-so-humble host, Jamie. Joining me, as always, is the British gentleman agent, Mr. Phil G. Say hello, sir.
Hello, sir. Hello, everybody. You'll be delighted to know that coming off the last 2 weeks when I saw Night and Day and The Expendables, I haven't seen any movies this week, so you are spared any angry rants from me, so you can keep listening without any fear. We are once again joined by a special guest, but this time, back by popular demand and armed with the power of the Logitech desktop microphone that retails for less than $9.95 and is Skype approved, it's Queen Christina.
Hi. Hi, everybody.
She likes flattery. I do my best. Also joining us is the host of the Ed Hocken Show on BraindeadRadio.com, Captain Ed Hocken.
Hi there.
As well as our friend Roy.
What microphone do you use, Ed?
Just something I got from Radio Shack.
You have questions, they have answers. Is that true, actually? Because I've never gone to a Radio Shack
with
that
service. I've never asked a question in my life.
So. That's false advertising. I would sue
I'm trying
them.
To get in as much product placement as possible this week. It's about time we started making some money on this show.
Money? So, what's that mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Joining us as always, also is our friend from up north, Mr. Lou.
Hello, everybody, and for those that are curious about product, I am using a Sennheiser German headset.
German? Nice.
German.
Money is paper that can be used for goods and services. I should have said that before. Damn it.
You should have.
Jamie would have said it. Jamie's an encyclopedia of Simpsons quotes.
Of classic Simpsons quotes. Indeed, I am. We don't want to listen to that bullshit. I do it every other week. Now, Lou's the only one who actually saw a new movie this week. Sir, what did you see?
I saw probably Roger Ebert's most despised movie. I believe it's in his book that you guys are talking about, and that would be I Spit on Your Grave.
The remake.
The book's not called that. Remake.
No, the book is not called that. The movie is called that. It's one of his reviews, which he called a vile bag of garbage.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with him.
So I've never seen the original, and I'm a little nervous here. So, Mr. Ebert, please, you're a lifelong hero of mine. I hope my review is not going to upset you, and you're going to and the internet for my opinion of the remake. But it's actually not a bad movie. I mean, it's not something that I don't think the general populace is going to go running willy-nilly to try and find at their local Cinemax. But this is a competently made movie, which apparently the original is not. And the questionable parts of the movie dealing with the rape scenes are... It's only about a 10-minute sequence, whereas I believe in the original there's repeated...
It's like a half hour in the original.
Ebert makes it sound like it's over almost an hour.
No, so, it feels like it.
In this movie, that is not the case, and what is shown is definitely enough to get across what is happening, but it doesn't become voyeuristic or portrait torn in any sense of the stretch of the definition of those words, so... It's a decent movie. It's not a fantastic movie. I'm more concerned about the fact that it kind of riffs off of like those Rube Goldberg kind of deaths that you get in the Final Destination movies. So it basically takes the first half of the movie, obviously, is the guys ganging up on this girl, and they all have their quirks. And in the second half of the movie, she takes those quirks and turns the tables on the guys and stages various ways of killing them that bring back that original quirk. So it is a well done movie. The acting it's a good act. It's a well acted movie. I thought they could have done a little more with the girl's loss of her humanity, I guess you could call it, after she gets away from the guys and then comes back and starts hunting them down. You see it in her eyes that she's kind of like she's lost whatever she had before, but they never really explore it, and it sort of just turns into these over-elaborate types of death sequences. So it's certainly not as controversial, I don't believe, as the original movie, but maybe that's just a sign of the times, because I think this movie is really coming out on a low spotlight. I don't think a lot of people are even aware that it's coming out, and anything that it, any sort of momentum it has, I believe they're going to try to build off of the original, which probably more people know about than have seen.
Probably. So, I agree.
So it's,
I do have a question about that, Lou, if
sure.
I may.
Sure.
I'm wondering, and with your earthly knowledge of these things and of critics, both old and new, I'm wondering if you feel that the critics, when the movie comes out, are going to trash this film just on principle, just because of what it represents, of what it comes from, that they're just not... And also the fact that it's a horror remake, so automatically critics
are
going to...
Yeah, I think the remake angle might make more of a splash with them than trying to link it back to the original, because really, if you've seen any of the Eli Roth Hostel movies, they're far worse than anything that you'll see in this movie, so I don't...
However,
they might try to play that up, but I can't.
That might be true, but like nothing Eli Roth has done can hold a candle to the original Mayor Zemaki, I Spit on Your Grave from 1978. Can't even touch it. It's a pretty disturbing, nasty fucking movie. I was not even aware of Ebert, and also Gene Siskel was appalled by it as well, just not as harshly. Well, no, he was too, actually. I stand corrected on
that.
His mustache fell off. He was so appalled.
I think the campaign successfully to have it pulled from the theaters in Chicago, did they not?
They tried to get it. I don't know how that worked out.
Okay.
But all I know is I saw the movie before being aware of the controversy, and I felt the same way. So it was nice to be like, hey, I'm a huge Roger Ebert fan. He felt the same way. Hey, great minds think alike. Not really. but no, that is true, though. I mean, I didn't know about that till afterwards, and a lot of his criticisms I had, it's just it is a nasty fucking movie.
It's disgusting. It is. I mean, that's the opposite way. You feel unclean.
This is one of the it's one of the only movies that if someone says they liked it, I will look at them and just go, okay, goodbye. Because film is subjective, obviously. Some people are going to like stuff that I don't, vice versa.
Absolutely.
This is one of them. I just go, how in the fuck can you say you watched this movie and liked it?
Yeah. Well, and that's interesting for this movie because I mean, I don't care for the subject matter either, but I've seen more conventional movies with rape scenes that are far more disturbing than what I've seen in this movie. So, and they're more mainstream than this movie will ever be. So, again, is it just because it's going to be pigeonholed under the horror genre that it's going to raise this flack? Because really, there's no supernatural elements to it. I mean, it's strictly just terrible human behavior and. With most movies, I like the movie to give me a story and show that the characters go through an arc. And if the movie's not going to do that, then whatever genre it's playing, I want it to satisfy that requirement. If it's an action movie, give me action. If it's a comedy, make me laugh. If it's a horror movie, try to scare me. And this movie doesn't really do any of those things. The only thing it kind of does is like with the girl. And even the guys, they basically, whatever they do in the movie, they're just robbing themselves of their own humanity. And I think people that watch this and just walk away with it without really thinking about it to any great length, well, I think it kind of, it just kind of deadens your humanity as well. And that probably scares me more than anything that the movie shows, so...
That's the definition, though, for a lot of filmmakers these days, young and upcoming filmmakers or studios, one of the two. It seems like the definition of horror these days is doing unspeakable things to helpless human beings, and that on its own is enough to...
Yeah,
they don't seem to understand the difference between horror and repulse.
Right,
yes, exactly. Like, to me, this is not really what I consider a horror movie. So it's... it's a drama. I mean, like a horror movie has supernatural elements or some sort of evil force working behind the scenes, but this is just bad people acting badly under bad situations. And is that horror? I mean, then if that's true, then aren't war movies horror then too? Like, I don't know how you can draw the distinction, but it just makes it an easy category, obviously, because of the violence, like the torture stuff in it. So.
Right. And also seeing that one of the Dream Warriors is one of the rapists is just creepy as hell. I don't know if you noticed that reference. Joey, the mute hero from Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and 4, is now a rapist, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. And
Ronnie Eastman.
Good job.
Yeah, exactly.
Supernatural. So.
He was. Okay, I did not know. I haven't watched Supernatural yet. I hear a lot of great things about that show.
Mm.
I'd be interested to know from Ed and Christina. Christina first, what do you think of these movies? I mean, we're talking, like, I don't know, it's been like a decade now since we started getting this glut of torch. I don't use the moniker torture porn. I like to think of something else. But these kind of movies that are about just the horror of hurting people in gruesome ways, what do you think about them?
Well, I'll use torture porn because that's pretty much all it is to me. I don't find that sort of movie to be scary. I mean, Saw doesn't scare me. Hostel doesn't scare me. Watching someone just get chopped up isn't a horror movie. It's about the atmosphere. It's about a bunch of other things that are – it's more than just the killing that makes a movie a horror movie. So to me, I don't consider that to be horror genre. I just consider that to be torture porn, and I don't watch it because I don't like it. It doesn't scare me. It just grosses me out.
What scares you, Captain Ed Hocken? I'd really like to know.
Well, I'm not going to say because I'm not a big horror fan, so I haven't watched many horror movies, but I'm going to have to agree with what Christina says. From what I hear from horror fans, it's, you know, a lot of this stuff related to torture porn, as it were, it's just gross, so there's nothing actually scary or enjoyable about it. It's, you know, just a lot of gore for the sake of gore, and there's nothing from that. I'd always had heard from at least the great horror directors that there was the great, you know, there was at least some sort of moral to the story. You know, it's kind of like the old EC comics, that there was shock value, but there was a reason for it. And there's nothing really found with these. I mean, the only reason we're still getting Saw movies is because they're dirt cheap and they make money because people will not stop going to them. You know, and unfortunately, I think that definitely crowds out the potential for actually, you know, good horror. So. Yeah. And the fact is, this sounds kind of like then the remake of Last House on the Left, which apparently I had heard the original had a very brutal rape scene, and in this it doesn't even do anything.
The original Last House on the Left is just, I don't know, it must be something about context, because I, having seen both the original I Spit in Your Grave and Last House on the Left, I just don't find Last House on the Left to be that I wasn't shocked by it. My jaw was to the floor watching the original I Spit in Your Grave, though.
Well, I think isn't the original, though, more exploitation, basically? That's what the true exploitation movie in the world in.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, yeah.
Maybe Cannibal Holocaust.
It's also because they were the first to do it, you know? It's tough to really, you know, I guess you would say to shock people, but really, wouldn't a horror movie, the point of it is not, you know, it's just scary, but not just, you know, you can go for a jump scare, but it's not going to, you know, last compared to a completely unsettling, you know, kind of feeling. I don't know. Like, I've never really followed horror, so this is definitely out of my element.
And just so people understand my definition of a horror film, it would be an extended cut of The Expendables. Let's move on. Zing!
He's been saving that one.
I was saving
all week.
All week. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, I'm so predictable.
That's okay.
But speaking with horror films, let's talk about another X-Men movie made by Fox. Oh, they keep coming tonight. Jamie, we finally heard some news this week about what X-Men First Class is going to be about, not just who's in it. And by the way, there seem to be a hell of a lot of people in this damn movie, including this week we found out Oliver Platt, who I bet you he's going to play a douchebag. You doubt me, I know you do, but I bet he's going to play an arsehole in this, but we'll see. So, Jamie, what did we hear about X-Men this week?
Story came out from Ain't It Cool News late Friday night. Harry Knowles, the big cheese over there, talked to Bryan Singer. Basically gave a lot of the details of the plot. It confirmed our suspicions that it was going to be set in the 60s, so we'd see a lot of backdrop of JFK, you know, the civil rights movement, et cetera, et cetera. Vietnam, obviously. Xavier Magneto, young guy, starting school. The villains will be the Hellfire Club, is that correct?
That's correct.
They're correct. And that is the big baddie who Kevin Bacon is playing, Sebastian Shaw, thank you. They're going to go for more, like, more 60s James Bond era in the technology. So I guess that means, like, people will be, you know, the villain will have, like, a little cat rubbing it. I don't know.
A laser. He'll have a laser.
He'll have a laser. That's right. Thank you. and the costumes will be a little bit, you know, more closer to the comic books of the time, which makes you do – it does make you wonder. It's like, so are they going to walk around in those blue and yellow spandex like they joked about in the first movie?
On. That's exactly what they're going to have. I said that. I said they'd have uniforms like that. I could smell it. That's what they were going for. And apparently also Singer said we'll get a picture of them in about a month or so. That's what he said.
He said that.
We're not keeping this under wraps, so we'll find out what they look like pretty quickly.
It's a weird position with this franchise because we've talked about this privately. It's, you know, we've had two X-Men movies now that open huge, but really they just dropped like a rock in the second weekend because people didn't like them. And you go, this sounds intriguing in a good way, but is it too little too late for this franchise? And I really have to think it is. I think once this hits in early January of next year, I think people are going to be like, okay, it's another X movie. I didn't like the last two. Well, who's in it? Well, Wolverine's not in it. Okay, well, who else is in it? And they're going to name all these characters you've never heard of before. Oh, I'm not going to go see it.
Yeah. Christina, first of all, you know, where do you stand on the X-Men franchise at the moment? Are you even giving this a chance or a hope?
I genuinely could not care less about this movie. I love the first X-Men movie. The second one was outstanding. The Last Stand was a complete and utter disaster. I despise that movie. I despise Brett Ratner for what he did to that movie.
Oh, don't blame Brett Ratner for that. Okay. Don't.
Here we go.
I have to jump in.
Try to be friends.
No. You can destroy it all you want, but it's like you have to blame Matthew Vaughn for dropping out 2 weeks before the movie opened. For the movie started filming.
That's totally true.
Exactly. Well, no, he made all the major decisions, and it's like to see him shit-talking X-Men 3 now, it's like, okay, you cast these actors, you set the locations, you help write the script, but it's Ratner's fault? Fuck you. I cannot stand hearing Matthew Vaughn shit-talking in the press like this. Well, I made Kick-Ass. Yeah, you made Kick-Ass, and you're taking a pay, and you're doing this movie now because of it. Come on.
Which is what I've always found fascinating.
It's not against you, Christina. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a Ratner fan, but it's like, come on, you can't blame the guy for this movie. You can't.
I retract the Brett Ratner statement.
Okay. No, don't.
Beep.
I hated The Last Stand. I had hope for Wolverine, and that movie was just flat. I hated it, and I think my hatred for the last two movies is what's feeding into my complete lack of interest for this one. If the last ones had been good, I would have been ready to go. Let's go see this opening weekend. Can't wait. But now it's just like I'm all X'd out. I don't care anymore.
X'd out. I like that. Well, Lou, what do you think?
It says it all, actually.
I'm with Christina. I've already said on numerous podcasts I'm not really a big X-Men fan. I'm not a big fan of these multiple superheroes in one movie kind of thing because when you have that, there's really no stakes because if there's a problem, there's always a superhero that has the power to overcome the problem. So,
this is the superhero named Deus Ex Machina. Is there a hero named that?
Exactly. The R2-D2 syndrome. But, but I have to say that setting it in the 60s is kind of cool. I could see them tripping around. That might be interesting.
Ed?
I'm indifferent about this franchise anyway, but I'm not crazy about them setting it in the 60s, you know? I think a lot that's already been that row has been tilled by Watchmen. And, I don't know if it's going to be worthwhile. I always felt that if they're going to do the first class, they should bring in some new characters instead of just rehashing the same thing we've already seen. And I think that the parallels to the 60s are going to be so ham-handed, it's going to be really bad. I'm just not – I never had any enthusiasm for this project, and I'm not going to start now. But it's just that we've seen these characters before. You know, why don't we just see something else? So,
I have such a dilemma about this one. I have such a dilemma because the description I read of the story sounds pretty cool. It sounds interesting. As if they make an X-Men movie and they actually make it about something. Like, that was my problem with X-Men 3. It was diluted. It wasn't about anything. It had good ideas in it, but none of them were giving breathing space to play out. X-Men Origins Wolverine was about nothing, and I despised it, and we're not going into that again.
This is exactly then why I'm not crazy about the idea of having an Avengers movie. Because as Lou had said, you're not. I mean, unless they move beyond the origin story, you're going to have this problem where everything's going to feel rushed in some way. There's no way in a two and a half hour movie you're going to be able to fully pull it off. The only one that was able to do it really was X2. And that was because they that was Wrath of Khan. So.
Ed, they're converting the Avengers into 3D. It's going to be awesome. You're going to sit there and you're going to like it.
Oh, Jesus.
Robert Downey Jr. in 3D, improving.
Mark Ruffalo in 3D. There you go.
That's all we need, dude. We can see those purple pants ripping in front of us on 3D.
I'm sold.
Dude, it's like those pants are in front of me, you know?
Jesus. I hope I'm not in your audience. Oh, my God. But, I mean, so I'm interested in the story, but I feel the same way you guys. Am I an idiot for wanting to believe that this could be good? I have been burned by these bastards at Fox too many times, so I'm not sure I want to get too excited about it. And also, I can see where this is headed. I can see, I mean, they seem to be saying that the focus is going to be on Xavier and Magneto and, you know, how they start out as the best of friends and their relationship gets torn about by two completely opposing ideologies as their relationship progresses over everything that happens. Obviously, some major horrible event's going to happen in this film, which is going to tear them apart. And that's cool. That's
Kennedy will be assassinated, and that divides them.
But yeah, by the comedian in a cameo.
Exactly,
yeah,
by a mutant. It'll be like Forrest Gump with mutants, you know.
Oh, God.
We'll see if you can go through every... I'm telling you, that's what it feels like.
Oh, my God, you're right.
Let Robert Zemeckis make this fucking movie.
Right, yes. So you're saying that some mutant's just going to be standing next to Martin Luther King?
Yes,
when
exactly.
He gets shot?
Exactly.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, well,
they're
we'll
part of the conspiracy, you know. I don't know.
You should.
See, like, mutants in Vietnam and shit. I don't know.
No, that would be cool. That would be awesome. Well, no,
we kind of already saw that in The Watch. Then,
no, in Wolverine.
We saw Tobias Fumke in... Oh, that's right. We did see that.
Yeah, we did see that. But see, the problem I have is I like that story. I like that the focus is going to be on Xavier and Magneto and how that gets torn about. I want to see that story.
There's
I want
to characters.
See...
That's the problem. It's like...
That's the problem. It's going to start out the first 10 minutes. It's going to be about that story.
Hey, my name is Chuck. You're not hey, my name is Eric. Hey, you're a mutant. Hey, let's go. You know, is that what it's going to be
cool.
like?
I hear you're quite an animal. Look who's talking.
It's going to be like the old Reese's peanut butter at cup commercial. Hey, you got chocolate in my peanut butter. Hey, you got peanut butter in my chocolate. Hey, that'll be the start of the movie.
You're not helping my enthusiasm for this one bit.
I'm trying to get it. I'm trying to bring it to reality. Goddamn.
You're trying to destroy it, and I agree. It's
but this thing is being rushed rather quickly. But again, it's like okay, well, the first three were very fast shoots, also under deadline. So. You know, work
but that
the first
is what
two
I
times.
Do not understand, sir. That is what I do not understand why Vaughn is doing it this time. One of the reasons that he left X-Men 3 because he said he couldn't get that movie made in the time that was given to him. Now it's the exact same story, and yet he's cool with doing it. Now, yeah, I know I know why he's doing it because he needs to do a studio job. Yes, I know that. But still, I mean, he's a little bit of a hypocrite. I like the guy. He's made good movies, but he's just coming off a little bit of a hypocrite to me.
Yeah, well, it is, and no one wants to call that out, which is strange. But it's about the nerd cred. It's got people it's got some people excited. I hope it's a good movie.
You say that, Jamie, about nerd cred, but you can see how far nerd cred gets you.
Exactly.
And it doesn't get you very far.
That is true, and I agree with you. But the difference here is that at this point, the public is it's so questionable if the public's even going to care at this point about an X-Men movie. You might as well try to get the nerd cred back. Get Bryan Singer on board.
I mean, it's rare to score both nerd and popular cred at the same time. That's what District 9 got. So.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
It's
yeah.
a rare thing when it happens, yeah. but...
Well, I mean, they sold it. They sold District 9 really well. That was the other thing. So
yeah. I just want to add to you, Phil. I could get excited about a Magneto and Xavier story if it was just those two characters and they focus totally on them. But when they bring, as soon as you start hearing all these other characters that they bring in, you know that their story is going to get watered down because they have to share screen time with all these other characters. If they said we're doing an X-Men Magneto or Xavier Magneto movie, then I would get excited.
The idea of setting something in the 60s, I've heard about this before. When they talked about redoing Bond, some people talked about maybe they should set it in the 60s and the other time. So I've heard of talk like this before. It's still weird why maybe the tech, maybe it'll look good. I don't know. I mean, this was used for X2, but one of the only X-Men stories I really like, which is God Loves, Man Kills, is specifically set in 1982. And for some reason, that... the way it looks was actually great. I don't know why, but it was a great book. But that became X2. So, I mean, could you have a period-specific story and make it good? Yeah, but it's just weird to have it in the 60s, no less. And you feel like it's just going to rehash all the great, you know, 60s montage moments. To me, it's like, if I want my 60s, I'll continue watching Mad Men. Thank you very much.
Which was just funny to see them cast January Jones as Betty Draper, the mutant, as opposed to Betty Draper, the human bitch, on Mad Men.
And isn't she going to play the White Queen?
Yeah. Yes.
So there's going to be no change, basically.
No change, exactly. She has powers in this one. I'm looking forward to that so we can see Xavier and Magneto, like, teaching in the danger room, like, while they're, you know, drunk off their ass drinking scotch. Yeah, just jump the laser.
Well, 60s powered, so the computer's going to be huge, and they're not going to do a whole lot.
No.
And they're going to cost,
unless it's that 1960s from Metal Gear, where they had all that technology. So, I don't know. But
it
should be interesting.
Oh, they'll be picking shrooms and whatnot.
But,
we will.
Hunter Thompson's going to stop by. It's going to be wild.
Lama Dolly.
Adding a little bit of confusion to this is because they haven't really made it clear whether or not this is going to be a prequel or a reboot. And I think Singer's terminology suggested they're going to ignore certain aspects of the last two movies.
There's no way, if these are the same people from the first and second movies, their ages aren't going to match up at all.
I mean, from the last two movies, I'm sorry. They're ignoring certain aspects from X-Men 3 and Wolverine, apparently.
They had that problem in Flintstones' Viva Rock Vegas, and it turned out all right.
Thank God for that. Continuity matched so well. No, but the brings to the next story is supposedly Fox is still going to do this damn Wolverine sequel, which is another movie where you just go, people probably won't show up for as much as they did the first one, because the first one sucked.
Not a bad idea what they're trying to do with the Wolverine sequel, and that they were going to set it where he goes to Asia, because I had heard those were always good stories. I mean,
yeah, but they should have done that for the first movie. That's my problem. It's if they had done that for the first movie, then they wouldn't have had a problem. Well, I mean, the movie could have still sucked, but still, I mean...
Let me just say something about that, Jamie.
Yeah.
Ed says that, you know, he's heard that they're great stories. I've read them. I've read the stories where he goes to Japan, and they're Teflon. It's a great idea, and it really gives you an idea of his character, and he's got a sort of sense of honor about him, and it really plays on that. But the story's really not about much at all.
It was done by Frank Miller.
Oh, yeah, so exactly. It's actually one of the few Frank Miller stories that isn't incredibly convoluted. It's I was just saying nothing against Frank Miller, because he's written some wonderful stuff.
Yeah, like RoboCop 2.
Exactly.
And RoboCop 3. And The Spirit.
Oh.
So he has got
over to you, Jamie. President of the Frank Miller fan club, over to you. What's going on with Wolverine here?
Well, I mean, it's just the rumor this week is that David Slade is the front runner to direct the Wolverine sequel. Hugh Jackman pretty much dropped out.
That was a great picture, by the way, on our site of David Slade. What was that all about?
I just found it. I just, you know, type in the name on Google. No, but, I mean, he directed a great movie with Hard Candy, a not-so-great movie with 30 Days a Night, and a Twilight movie. So, it's what it is. I haven't seen the Twilight movies. You know how I stand on those.
And it said in the article that he had some conflicts with the producers on that one.
That was widely reported, yeah. I mean, how he supposedly did not – he really didn't get along well with many people while making Twilight. And yet, according to many, he made the only good movie. I say according to people. I haven't seen them. Can't tell you. Moving on.
But, I mean, the important thing, you actually wrote, I'm going to give you props there, you wrote a great article about Hugh Jackman and the fact that he's resigned himself to his fate as this character. He's dropped out of a movie called Avon Man, which is not a superhero movie, just in case you were wondering, that they're really reaching for ideas. They're not. It was a comedy about a guy delivering Avon. Exactly.
Selling Avon, dude.
Yeah, this is a real shame for Hugh Jackman. I just got to say that, this guy's got talent, and he's not using it. It's real. I mean, I know he does stage stuff, so we can't exclude that. I mean, let's not disrespect the stage. But, you know, really, I mean, if you say he's doing it for the money, we can understand. Come on, he could do other stuff here.
He is.
We do
have the
president of the Hugh Jackman fan club here tonight with us, don't we, Christina?
Damn right. I love him so much, and it makes me so sad that he's, like you said, he's pretty much resigning himself to the fact that he's only ever going to make money being Wolverine, because the movies that he makes when he's not Wolverine, they don't really make money. I mean, Kate and Leopold didn't really make money. Did The Prestige make money?
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, well.
But then there was The Fountain.
Yeah. So The Prestige is pretty much the exception and not the rule. So if he's, it's pretty obvious that people, the general public, is only going to maybe see him as Wolverine. So he's just going to do Wolverine movies for the rest of his career, which sucks. Because, like you said, he's so talented, and I wish he could just find the right vehicle to push him away from that and do other things, but I guess not.
He's not a movie star, but he has sort of the movie star mentality in that, like, he goes around, he's a nice guy, he always sells the movie, you know, he puts on a good presentation for himself. The only other person who does that is Will Smith. I mean, like, that's the kind of guy you want selling your movie. And the fact that, yeah, as you said, he's so talented, he can just, you know, why isn't this guy doing other things other than these damn Wolverine movies?
Well, he is. I mean, give him his props. He has done other things.
Well, true, but it's just... They're not...
And do you know what? Also, I can't blame him for... No, exactly. I can't blame him for doing Van Helsing. I really can't.
Oh, I
thought that was going to be a sure thing. Well, that's fine.
I can blame him for that. I don't blame him for Australia, you know, because it's like, well, he's getting to work with Baz Luhrmann. That's, you know, you don't get that opportunity often, but it's like, Van Helsing, good God.
I just thought it. No, I mean, I don't know.
This is all because of Viva Laughlin. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. That's what did it. Damn you, Les Moonves. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the head of CBS. Thank you. yet another dead silence here. Now, this next topic.
Well, we're all depressed. It's really sad.
Yeah, they're making X-Men movies.
No, we're making Wolverine 2, yeah. It's, and also, I mean, let's be fair, Christina. We don't know that they're going to make Wolverine movies till the end of time. Let's really.
He'll be 80 years old and playing Wolverine. You know, getting a stunt double in there.
Yeah, clearly he can't make these movies that much longer unless he wants to start taking HGH supplements. But
he's only 40. What the hell? The dude's relatively young. It's like, let's be a little fair here.
40 to 20.
It is.
We rename this podcast Land of Hate.
Unless he ages like Benjamin Button, you know.
That would make a great Wolverine movie. He finally starts aging backwards.
Wolverine already, I funny you say that, X-Men 3 is the only one where he actually looks old. Like, he looks worn out and tired in some scenes in that movie. Every other one, he looks relatively young. It's like, what the hell happened, dude? Your aging serum wore off?
I'd be tired, too, if I was on set with Brett Ratner.
Zing. Could be worse. Could be...
The opinions of Queen Christina do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of your own unsuspected participants. Let's move on. Because it's also the fact that give Jackman his props. He does know the character, and he does, like he says, the fans never have a problem telling him what they think, and he knows what they want to see. And what they don't want to see is Wolverine, as you've often said, Jamie, you do a great impression of this, Wolverine acting like a simpering bitch over his lost love, and having to get
killed, you mean that?
By Halle Berry.
Oh.
And then be leader? Wolverine's not the leader of the... We've spent too much time on X-Men. Why do we give Fox the time?
Let's talk about something that you and Christina want to talk about. How about that?
Oh, yes, sir. Christina, do you want to introduce this one?
All right.
Bye-bye.
Next.
I found an article on Cinema Blend, which was originally on MTV.com, with an interview with Guillermo del Toro, where he basically puts the nail in the coffin and says that Hellboy 3 is not going to happen. And my heart is just broken. I feel so sad, because I love the first two Hellboy movies. I think those movies were fantastic. And the ending of Hellboy 2 had me chomping at the bit for Hellboy 3. I would have sat in the theater right there and just waited for years for the next one to just go make it and play it on the screen. So... my heart's breaking, but when you look at the stats that I've got in front of me, the first Hellboy movie had a $66 million budget, the worldwide gross was $99 million.
Well, that probably wasn't the real budget anyway.
Yeah, and that budget isn't including marketing and everything like that. The second movie had a budget of $85 million, and the worldwide gross was $160 million. And that budget isn't including marketing and everything like that. So if they're spending all of this money and they aren't really turning that much of a profit, I'm not sure how much the DVDs brought in, but if they're making these movies and they're not turning a profit, I can understand why he would want to just say, screw it. Plus, Ron Perlman's off doing Sons of Anarchy on FX. Great show, by the way.
Yep.
So I guess Hellboy 3...
And he doesn't like doing that makeup either, does he?
He really doesn't. He doesn't like doing it. So if I had to choose between sitting in a chair for 6 hours getting makeup put on me or sitting in a chair for 2 hours to just get makeup put on me for a regular TV show, I'd probably go with the TV show too. But it makes me sad because I was really looking forward to Hellboy 3. And you
I didn't
like the ending at all on Hellboy 2. That they painted themselves into a corner with that. He never had kids in the comic. I think really probably what they should do, I don't know how well the animated movies do, but they should just stick with that and have their independent stories. That way they could have a Lobster Johnson movie. And there are good stories there. You know, or otherwise, we just have the books. We have BPRD, the book. I just didn't like the way that Hellboy 2 ended.
Just so we're clarifying, for people who don't actually know what the ending of Hellboy 2 is, it's not just that, as Ed put it a couple of weeks ago, he's all man down there. It's more than that.
I was just about to bring that up again. Actually.
Yes,
hell man.
Line, so I wanted to repeat it for you. The fact is, before that, the Angel of Death itself tells Liz, when Hellboy is near death, that she has a choice of either saving or letting him die. But Hellboy is the harbinger of doom and will bring about the apocalypse. So if she lets him die, she's saving the Earth. If she lets him live, no matter what she does, the Earth is going to be destroyed by his hand. That's what the Angel of Death says. And she makes the human, selfish, interesting choice. She lets him live. And he brings her back to live. And then we find out that they're pregnant as well. Which, you know, okay, as the last scene, I couldn't understand. It's not to everybody's taste. But it's a great setup for an ending. And just to repeat what Del Toro himself said, I've got the quote here. I'll read it to you. The heartbreak for me is that I know how it ends. And I don't know if I want to see that ending. And what he's saying is, obviously, he's talking about that the character's going to die. It's going to be very, very tragic, and also we'll probably get some sex scenes, and I don't know how Liz...
For the kids. Him.
I mean, Jesus Christ, Ron Perlman without the Hellboy makeup, he could pump her to career. I mean, he's just a huge dude, man. It's just, I don't know, but no one's with me on that. But what was interesting...
If Jabba the Hutt can maintain it, then I think Ron Perlman can.
Do you think that's going to be on the Blu-ray, sir? Sex scene with him and Carrie Fisher? I bet it is. That's what we're waiting for.
Probably.
Yeah.
In Lucas's personal archives.
Jesus.
That's why. Why do you think they call him Chewie?
Down the line, I'm not quite comfortable with here. I'm afraid.
He's not called Chewie because it's short for Chewbacca.
Oh my God.
Oh God. Mike Mignola had a very interesting quote about Hellboy 3. You're a very funny man, Mr. Williams, but you're very, very sick and, you know. It was viewing I spit on your grave that made him like this. You know, before this, he picked Daisy.
Actually, it was watching Ren and Stimpy as a child. That's what did it
there
to me.
There you go.
That and Animaniacs, let's be honest here.
So they were right to can it. Cause it made
basically, yes, they do warp children's minds.
Oh, you're going to get me singing the log song. You keep talking
about you're going to make me sing Chicken Boo, so that's about...
No, I've told you, I don't know Animaniacs as well as you do, because we only got it once a week. You got it every day, but we only got it once a week. So we only got select episodes, and which is, you know, how many episodes are there of Animaniacs?
Like 100, I think.
100, and like I must have seen like 20 or something.
They're funny. But anyway, going back to your topic of Mr.
Hellboy. Yes, sir. So I just didn't think you cared, which you don't, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Mike Mignola said something really, really, really interesting about this, the fact that obviously he's still writing Hellboy as a comic and he has an ending in mind, but it's an ending that he's going to do in about 15 years, he says, you know, when he's finally done with it. And he's already said it involves probably killing the character off. So if Del Toro comes out with Hellboy 3 before that and kills off Hellboy, he's going to feel like, well, wait, I'm not done yet. I've still got it. And he's going to feel like there are surprises ruined First of all, I don't quite get that argument because he's already said that he's going to kill him off. So we're all going to see it coming. But also, I can understand where he's coming. It is a tough position to be in. Basically, the odds are against this. When I said I wanted to see Hellboy 3, I was being selfish. I know these movies don't make money. They've never made money. The only reason I want to see it is to say, screw everybody else. I care about the art. I want to see it. I wanted to see a $150 million cost.
The art.
That's what everyone...
What the hell are you, cost. James Lipton all of a sudden?
Sorry.
You going to have Ron Perlman on the Inside the Actor Studio there?
I'm just having a moment. You put some images in my head that I'm finding it hard to shake at the moment, I'm afraid.
Of James Lipton?
Huh. No, Jesus. Oh, so,
what is your favorite cuss word, Phil?
When you enter heaven, what would you like God to say to you?
We're showing Hellboy 3 in the next room. That's what I'd like to say. Since we're not going to get it. So it's a
real... Udarowski's Dune is on the other screen.
Oh, man. Don't you do that to me. That's... So, but no, actually, Jamie, you make up a really great point, because now Hellboy 3 will join the great pantheon of the greatest films never made.
Okay,
I don't know about that. Yeah, well, because you don't like them, but that's
they're fine. Okay. I think they're okay. I just don't, like, go crazy over them.
I didn't go crazy about the first, just to clarify. I thought it was solid, but I wasn't blown away by it. But the second one, I really, really, really... adored, actually. I really, really got into it, but it's not to everyone's taste. Who knows where the third was going to go? We'll never know, and it's a tragedy, because it's at the very least these Hellboy movies provoke a reaction from people, which is but something you can't say about Wolverine 12, you know. So I'd rather see Hellboy 3 than 20 more Fox-made X-Men movies, or Fantastic Four Reborn with Adrian Brody as Reed Richards. No thanks, but we're not going to get it. So so there you are. Let's move on. What else are we talking about here, Amy?
Let's see. Speaking of, like, well, it's not really speaking of. It's not even it's a horrible segue. Good thing I didn't say it. We might get another Ninja Turtles movie. Eh. I grew up with the Ninja Turtles as a kid. Loved them. But, I don't know, are we kind of done with this franchise? They've tried to revive it a couple of times. No one kind of showed up. Do we need any more? Are we kind of done?
I got to agree with you on that, Jamie. Yeah.
I'd rather see this than a Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah. True.
That isn't saying a whole lot, though.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wow, seeing a fat Harold Ramis or another Ninja Turtles movie.
Like the last Ninja
I didn't know we had a choice between the two.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah, well,
what kind of diabolical supervillain are you? You must choose.
Yeah. Mr. Bit, on off.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Ninja Turtles.
I like the turtles. Go for it.
Thanks, Liz.
Christina, what do you think?
I'm pretty much with Jamie. I grew up with the Ninja Turtles. I love Ninja Turtles. My mom always tells the story about me. Lined up with my friends to go see the Ninja Turtles movie, and we were all screaming and yelling. I love Ninja Turtles, but it's time to let that go. I couldn't care less. Let it go.
I have a question to ask you, Christina, actually. I hope you don't mind me asking you this. You can feel free to hate me afterwards, but I'm going to confess it. Did you see Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie, theatrically?
Hell yeah, I did, and I'm not ashamed of it.
Oh, there you go, then.
Hell yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. I'm just
good for you two. Anyway, I wanted to see it because I was 11, and yeah, I mean, I wanted to see it, but it never played in my local theater. That was 95, so I remember that was the summer of Batman Forever.
Oh yeah. No, that's true. I saw it though, and I was the only one there with my mother. I saw it, but hey, look,
that was also the summer of Judge Dredd, if I remember correctly.
It was supposed to be. Thanks for that. Move on.
Wow. I didn't know where that guy
came from. No, it's Judge Dredd means a lot to us in the UK. It's like
really?
one of the few things the UK has got going for it. So.
Oof.
Thanks for that again.
It's pretty much,
what the fuck is going on here tonight?
Like, you've got King Arthur myth, the Beatles, what else?
Robin
Judge,
Who.
Yeah.
Harry Potter,
Judge Dredd. It's Bash the Brits edition of Movie Moan.
You are all cunts.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm using British swear words, so you know it's on. What I was saying off there about Turtles is that, first of all, I've got a funny story to tell you about Turtles. The first Ninja Turtles movie, that was my first ever experience with pirate movies.
Wow.
With, illegal movies. I didn't even know. I had a friend, because the movie in your country, it came out in spring 1990, mm-hmm. March, I believe. It didn't come out here till December 1990. That was a long wait. So, and I didn't know it was being made, because obviously we didn't have the internet back then. So when a friend of mine said to me, dude, I've got the Ninja Turtles movie, the live action one. It exists. Come to my house and I'll show you. I've got it on pirate video. Now, when they said pirate video, I thought pirate was just a video label. That I was that dumb that I thought, oh, that's cool. Okay, I've never heard of this label before. I've heard of Warner Home Video. Is it like that? No, it's Pirate Home Video. So they showed it to me, and it was a crappy copy, but it's one of those amazing memories that I remember from my childhood that I saw this movie. And I often think if the cops had busted us at that moment, what would my life have turned out like? But that never happened.
Hardened criminal.
I'm sure they'll be coming to my door now that I've confessed it. But
break down the door. We know you got that movie from 1990.
That was horrible.
That was. It could have been. That was. So
why does the cat sound like Dick Van Dyke? I don't understand. It just seems like it's one of those properties that just feels very 1990s to me. Early 1990s, like Bill and Ted or Beavis and Butthead. And it should stay there.
Sadly, they're bringing back Beavis and Butthead, and it's only a matter of time till they actually do bring back Bill and Ted. Because Keanu's 45, so by the time he's 50, yeah, maybe he'll do Bill and Ted 3.
The Next Generation.
The AARP edition of Bill and Ted.
But how can you do without George Carlin?
We'll do the Brando Superman Returns thing. It'll be a CG Carlin.
They're really going with you on that, Jamie. You hear that deafening silence? That's the deafening silence of approval. Don't let anyone shake your beliefs.
They'll get Robin Williams to fill in.
Oh, God. Hey, Bill, what you doing? Oh, we're going to go to the airplane. No, we don't. Don't make
what
me do
hell?
It. That was so bad, too. Okay, so last item before the debate, if we get to it, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, very popular book. There was it was a Swedish film, if I remember correctly, that came out last year or the year before last. It was a while ago.
Lou would know better than I would. I know all three movies were released, but weren't they shown for? They were released for TV, weren't they?
Really?
In Sweden? I'm not sure. Sweden, I think they were released. I think it released theatrically.
I think it was theatrically, too. Because so they made $100 million.
It was the biggest Swedish movie ever. So. Yep.
And now they're showing all 20 episodes. so they're going to do the American version. They've cast the lead role, finally. There was a lot of brouhaha over who was going to play it. A lot of names were brought up, like Ellen Page. Who else? God, a lot of people. Natalie Portman, a lot of no-names, et cetera, et cetera. They've settled on, what's her name here? Rooney Mara, I believe her name is, if I pronounce it correctly. You might also know her as Nancy from the god-awful Nightmare on Elm Street remake that came out earlier this year. I haven't read the book. I haven't seen the original film yet, although it is on Netflix, so I do need to watch it. Is this a good choice for you guys who've actually read the book or seen the previous film? Is this a good choice for that role?
I haven't seen her in anything yet, but all I can say is that the original actress was the perfect choice from what I had in my mind's eye after reading the book, so this girl has big shoes to fill, and I wish her all the luck.
I have to agree with what Lou said. The actress in the original was amazing, and I don't know what – I've never seen this new actress in anything, so I have no idea what they're going to do. So.
Well, she'll be in the Social Network this fall, which is won't be too far off. So we'll see if she can actually act. But I guess it's David. The only reason I'm actually interested is because it's David Fincher, because I'm such a big fan of that director that I'm curious to see him doing. Is this his most commercial movie? Really? I sounds like it is. I mean, I don't know why David Fincher would take on something like this.
It is actually. This is a hugely selling book. This is pretty much We're talking about something on the level of the Da Vinci Code, but actually, you know, this book is good.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully the movie isn't as lifeless, where it's just so boring. That's what I always tell people when the Da Vinci Code came out. It was like, oh, it's so controversial. Like, no, don't worry, honey. It's so goddamn boring, you won't know what they're talking about. You'll go to sleep during it. Like, they should give you a blanket while you're watching the Da Vinci Code.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I can say is that I know a lot of people find the first book pretty boring as well. So,
really?
The movie was great, element, though.
Yeah, the movie was great. Again, the first movie's all about so much about the place, the country. Like, it's just the setting that makes the story compelling. The mystery itself is not really that, you know, it's not what kept me interested. It was just seeing this, you know, seeing another country and how people, their attitudes towards each other, especially between sexes, which is quite a bit of an eye-opener. And the government, how the government's, you know, handles certain situations with people of questionable mental capacities and things like that. So it's a very interesting from that perspective. The second and third book are much more, what I would consider more by the standard thriller type, or mystery type stories. So, but the thing
and
that's
then
really...
I just want to chime in, Lou, that the original idea was that this was going to be a 10-book series, but the guy died of a heart attack some years ago. So there never was...
Yeah, he outlined all the books, but unfortunately, there's a legal battle going on between his wife and
between
his family and his girlfriend at the time. So those other books are tied up in legal hell. But he did outline them all. So who knows? Down the road, they still may surface in some form. But for the remake, I'm really interested with the casting of Daniel Craig, the current James Bond, who may never play that role again.
Shut up! Don't say the words. Shut up, Lou. Move on.
Because this role is so anti-Bond that he will be playing, and
it's a very schlunky kind of guy. I mean, the funny thing is, the movie, even though it's focused, the main character is this reporter. You're more interested, obviously, in the Noomi character. This is where it's going to be critical to see if this new actress could actually pull off the role.
Yeah. You know, and she has, interestingly enough, she has a scene that bothered me more in this movie than what I saw in I Spit on Your Grave. So it's going to be interesting.
I know what scene you're talking about, Lou. I saw a room filled with old people, and yet some of them did walk out. So it's going to be, I mean, you could see why Fincher would go for something like that.
Yeah.
It'll be very interesting if they pull that off. So,
what was that movie he did with the investigation about the killer?
Zodiac?
Yeah, so there's a Zodiac vibe to the first story, so I can see why he wanted to do this project, definitely.
Well, so it's more procedural?
Kind of.
Because I'm asking about Zodiac. I mean, it's just, was so to the, that you really could have called Zodiac Law and Order the movie, and you wouldn't have been lying.
Yeah. I don't want to mislead to say that it's going to be like a carbon copy of that movie, but...
No.
The through line of the story is kind of very methodical, so it kind of, I can see the similarities between the storylines, so that will be interesting to see how he handles the material.
Well, I mean, we're talking about that, and then also the actress who was starred in the original films, how is her name pronounced?
Noomi Rapace.
Thank you. Noomi Rapace is actually making the rounds in Hollywood, because she's not going to be in the Hollywoodized version. Rumor has it that she is up for a lot of movies, including Mission Impossible 4, Sherlock Holmes 2. She met with McGee for that stupid-sounding This Means War film. A couple of other things. Christina, she met with your buddy Brett Ratner, who just wanted to talk to her. Just wanted to have a meeting with her. No real reason.
Run!
She took the meeting, apparently. Something else she met with, but, you know, will she, you know, it'll be interesting seeing if her career can develop in Hollywood. I mean, because a lot of people, more people are going to see the Fincher version than they will the Swedish version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Not knocking quality, because I haven't seen it, but that's just stating facts. It's going to get a wider release. You know, it comes out next Christmas, actually, so cameras are going to be rolling relatively soon on that.
All right, and for Noomi could turn out to be a blessing in disguise, because she gets to reap the benefits of the buzz from the people that have seen those movies and yet not be typecast into that role, which this other actress, she might have that problem, I don't know. But if she can pull it off, like if she gets, you know, if she can cast or get cast in a good, big Hollywood movie, she could really abuse that those dragon tattoo books as a nice springboard to a long-term career, because there is something compelling about her. I don't know if we have to see. Maybe to me it's just the character, because the character is such a cipher and such a small, and she's a small actress, but physically she fills up the screen, which it's really quite an, I don't want to overbuild it, and Ed,
yeah.
you might want to modulate what I'm saying here, but she really is captivating when she's on the screen.
Well, I mean, Hawk, I thought the movie was really good too, so.
I did, actually. I thought it was, I mean, but it, as Lou said, what you're not talking about an earth-shattering mystery. What helps, and this is the thing I give foreign films more slack, is that I'm seeing something I haven't seen before. I haven't seen the scenery of Sweden. I haven't seen, you know, how people act and, you know, work and all that in Sweden. So you can give a movie with maybe a more conventional plot more slack because you're seeing in a country you've never seen before. So you want to see how people interact and do things and all that sort of stuff. So,
So you have
I
to
would
wonder,
say that. Oh, no, go ahead, Lou.
You have to wonder with the Hollywood version, are they going to try to spice up the mystery and make it more sensationalist or what?
I don't know. Much less where are they going to set it. The other thing is that, what we could end up in is situations like what they did with State of Play. Now, State of Play was originally a TV miniseries, so they had a lot more room to build out. And unfortunately, I mean, the movie version is good, but if you've seen the miniseries but first, you're completely spoiled, because that miniseries is great. And the movie just feels truncated. So we'll see if they'll do what they're going to do with this movie. So, as for this actress, I haven't seen her in anything else, I suppose. Well, that's great for her, and, hopefully it doesn't become a flash-in-the-pan-like situation. It's kind of why, because I love seeing Franca Potente from Run, Little Run, and I wish she was in more stuff, because I always look forward to seeing her in something. And she just kind of dropped off the radar.
Except for the Bourne movies, at least the first two.
Bourne movies, yes, but she was in Blow. That's about it.
That's right, she was in Blow. Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I don't know. I mean, it's not like they're going to Americanize the story. It's still set in Switzerland, if I remember correctly. Like, they're not really going
serious?
That. Yeah.
I thought they were relocating it.
I don't
US.
Think
the books are
in. They're going to shoot it in Louisiana because that's where everything shoots these days. But it'll be
goddamn right. we're getting the Twilight movies down here. So no, I think they were. They actually are going to set it in Switzerland, like the books and those movies.
Well, in the books, it's Sweden, but it's all rocky and with a lot of snow. So
yeah, what's the difference?
So they'll film it in Vancouver.
Exactly. So Luke, Daniel Craig, he's probably
right.
On 3.
Or in Montreal to get that real foreign vibe.
Yeah, it's Montreal. Exactly. Yes.
Wee
wee. Hey, wee wee.
Montreal is a very European-looking city.
Ooh la la.
Anyway, wrapping up this week's show, we've been doing debates lately because it's been dead in the news, if you haven't noticed. Here's a good one. On the eve of last week, At the Movies ended its, 35-year run on television? Something like that. It was on the air for quite a while. It ended, and Phil had this question, do people listen to movie critics anymore? Which is something that always, every year, someone brings it up when, a really popular movie that gets terrible reviews but, opens huge. Like, we had it last year with Transformers 2 when it made, $200 million in 5 days. People said, do critics matter? And then we always get that, though. But, funny, people didn't ask that question when District 9 opened big, or when Bastards opened big, or when Star Trek opened big. Well, they do when something shitty like Transformers 2 makes that kind of money. What do you guys think?
I have to agree with what you said, Jamie. It's very subjective. I think the question is, do people listen to, the mainstream TV and newspaper critics? That's the question you're looking for, rather than, what the Internet has pretty much democratized the entire, way things are, critiqued. I think that question should be elaborated on and be more specific.
I'll be more specific, Captain Ed Hawken. I'll be more specific. My question to you folks is, do you listen to any critics, other than obviously the good folks sitting here, metaphorically, do you listen to any critics at all, whether it be prints, on internet? Do you
I like to read a few good reviews. No critic is foolproof. So to me, that's why I was, and I know people have criticized me for this, but I always like the Rotten Tomatoes will get you a nice general vibe of what you're looking at. Now, I know there's Metacritic also. Also, you got to look at, when you go at Rotten Tomatoes, which is an aggregate, you got to look at, well, who's commenting, because most of these are from unknown websites you never heard of. Then you actually have, you look at some critics that actually do criticizing. So you don't read anything off of Ain't It Cool News.
No.
Because there, you never get any actual critiquing. You got to, like I said, you got to get a good range of what you're looking at. I mean, I admit I'll still read occasionally stuff off of Chud, but I don't. No one should ever base their criticism, you know, their information on just one critic, unless it's something you've never heard of. So you got to rely on what they're saying. You know, I mean, otherwise I wouldn't have heard about Moon. Critics are important when you, like I said, it's still the need to get. It's a source for information for the littler movie. You know,
perfectly put. So actually, that's the point that I wanted to bring up.
Unfortunately, on the internet, if you're not hanging, you still need to get some sort of receptor for this kind of information, because otherwise, you're not going to go outside of your basically your echo chamber and find out about other things. So you need to, you know, come across, you know, other things on the internet, and that's why there's still the need for the movie site and things like that. The problem is there are just too many movie sites and too many, you know, opinions floating around that aren't worth anything. So unfortunately, the internet, there's got to be a shakeout here.
Christina, what do you think? Do you listen to anybody?
I think it depends on what movie it is. It's weird because when I was younger, I would go see anything regardless of what any critic said. But now as I'm getting older, I think I have more of an appreciation for what certain critics do. I always read Roger Ebert. I always read him. Occasionally, I'll go on to Rotten Tomatoes, but I, like he said, you can't just take Rotten Tomatoes at face value because you have random people from random websites that I've never even heard of writing on that site. So you have to go through and find, okay, this person's from Variety, this person's from Hollywood Reporter, this person I recognize, and I'll read through their stuff. And if they like a certain movie, I'm not saying that I'm guaranteed to go see it, but I'm definitely more apt to go see it. And sometimes those little internet sites that you don't really like or the ones that you don't really go on, they can help champion a movie. Like Chud, when I first started going on to Chud, they were just pounding, beating the drum for Let the Right One In, and everybody was talking about that movie.
Well, yeah, and that was carried by a couple of very good writers. Now, the problem is Chud has its issues, and I'm not going to go slack Chud. But I can definitely say there's only maybe a couple of people, and it's not even the main guy who runs it. I've never seen him do a quality review ever, actually. I've never seen him actually do something of an actual movie, you know, review. You know, it's basically almost of a Harry Knowles-esque, you know, quality. It's like, I have nothing here. I have vapor. This is all you got. But yeah, Let the Right One In, you know, is a perfect example where you gotta listen. You know, there are movies that just don't have the marketing budget and need to be championed. And even in, and especially for people in the big cities, you gotta read, you know, the alternative weeklies. You gotta, you know, still there's the newspaper or something, because it isn't just gonna be through social networking. Social networking only works if you have a diverse number of people. If you're basically listening to people of similar opinion and similar likes, like I said, it's going to become an echo chamber. You're never going to come outside of that.
Which is basically what happened with Scott Pilgrim and Kick-Ass and a couple of other movies.
Well, I mean, Scott Pilgrim is a fantastic movie. It just wasn't marketed very well, I think. But I can see what you're saying in terms of the echo chamber.
We heard people nonstop beating that movie, like, just like till it got sterile.
Well, I mean, that just catered to a certain audience, and I could see that. That's a consequence, but it's, you know, for the most part, for other things of independent movies, you're still going to need, you know, some way. You're going to need someone to be beating that drum.
Yeah, the last movie I can think of was that got heavily pushed by the internet, like a movie that came out of nowhere. Was what's that movie from last year? I still haven't seen the horror movie, A Paranormal Activity. That was one that just got,
that was like Blair Witch. What I'm talking about is like, and that was based more on the mainstream media picked that up. I'm talking about, like I said, Moon, or even, you know, the classic example is Hoop Dreams.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It would be Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I didn't know about it till you guys told me, and other critics pushed
it. I didn't even know about it. I mean, I knew it was a huge book, but the talk about it being a movie did not get much of a lot of press. And then the fact that it was a relatively good movie on top of that. Even more so. I mean, because even then, there's a lot of nonsense, and in especially because the information isn't as solid with independent movies, you can get yourself into some real problems. Because unfortunately, that leads into a whole other thing of like, you know, the stereotypical indie movie. And,
yeah.
You know, it's quirky for quirk's sake and other nonsense.
Oh, yeah, so you're talking about Little Miss Sunshine. Yeah, I thought the same way.
Or that one with Paul Dano playing a mattress sim.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Lou, you are wise and sage, and you don't need to listen to any critic, but do you listen to critics?
This is a very interesting question because, like you guys, I kind of think that we all kind of grew up from watching reviews in the more traditional outlets with either through, you know, like Ebert and Siskel's show or your local paper. There are certain critics that I know from Toronto. I usually follow their reviews, but over time, with as Ed said, the internet coming on the scene and sort of making everybody a movie critic, my sources for whether to get a review for a movie or not have really fragmented, and I kind of go all over the place now. Lately, for the newest thing for me has been Twitter, and I know Jamie's on there as well. I'm not sure if the rest of you guys are, or I'm. But
I used to have Twitter. I'm not a fan of Twitter, though. I don't.
See, like, Twitter's my lifeline because I like Twitter because I'm not a big Facebook fan or going to individual websites. I like Twitter brings all that to me because somebody will put up a 140 character message and they'll have the link to say you should read this because this is a really good review. You know, that way I'm clicking on the link and the review is coming to me. I'm not going to the review, and I love that. That's that gives me the control over what I'm seeing. I don't have to spend time going to each individual movie critic's review site to find these reviews. I can pick and choose from this list of people that I'm following, and naturally it's a subjective list because I'm picking who I'm following and who I'm not following. But I find that it's been working pretty well for me. I'm getting a cross section of reviews of people that are giving me different opinions about the same movie, and that's the best way for me to get a feel for a movie is to get different reviews of the same movie. So for me, critics are just as important as they've ever been. But it's just that now it's not the big name. It's not just the Eberts and whoever that you know.
There's no one else. It really is just Roger Ebert, though. I mean, lack of a better term, a rock star. It was him and Gene Siskel. I used to stay up late to watch their show because I needed to know, particularly during the summer when I was going to go see everything, I wanted to know, particularly the ones I really wanted to see, what they thought. Like, I remember Phil and I talked about this. Like, I couldn't wait to see Mask of Zorro in the summer of 98. I had to see their review. Now, granted, I had already seen the movie, like, because we got it, like, late Friday night, early Saturday morning. So I'd already seen Mask of Zorro on the first matinee showing on Friday, but I wanted to know what they thought. Like, that mattered to me. I don't care anymore. It just doesn't matter.
They're just one more voice in a spectrum of reviews that you can get. But the interesting part of this question for me is, like, we represent the people that actively were out there seeking movie reviews. I'm really curious does the average movie goer, did they ever care about reviews in the first place? And if they do, where were they getting those reviews? Because most of the people that are doing reviews, they're not on national newspaper chains anymore, even local papers. I've seen, like, in the last couple of months, it's very interesting to watch all these, especially in the TV critic industry, they're all leaving their local papers and migrating to, like, internet chains. Like, there's a couple that have gone from the Chicago papers to going to AOL. There's another couple that have going from, like, I think New Jersey papers are going to HitFix. So it's a very interesting pattern to watch the reviewers leaving, like, the traditional media outlets and moving solely to the web ones. And I don't think the average moviegoer will ever reference these people. So
I don't think so. The newspaper industry is dying. I mean, this is all of the topic, but
it's part of the topic. No, I think you're right.
Where is the average moviegoer getting his review from? I have no idea. Do they just talk to
from you, Lou?
Does everybody know a movie nerd somewhere in the family? That every family must have one, I guess, because I don't know where they're getting their reviews from.
I really do wonder what's going to happen the day Roger Ebert dies, and that to me is going to be. And I love the man, but you know what I'm getting at? It's like that's the day where I start to wonder. Okay, where does film criticism go? Because he's the guy people still listen to. I don't know of anyone else. Like
he's
Rex
the only
Reed. You know, come on.
Yeah. He's the last beacon of what I consider unimpeachable movie reviews. I don't always
agree with
him.
I would say
everybody goes to that guy, or everybody knows who he is. After he's gone.
And Richard Roper. And people are going to cry foul when I say that, but like, you know, getting Roper on that show, people got used to him. They got accustomed to the guy. I listen to Richard Roper as well. I like his video reviews.
well, let me tell you something, Harman Jamie.
Harmon White. Yeah, I had to stop. Harmon White is somebody who I don't even like acknowledge because he's just one of those people that he.
You are acknowledging him.
You know what I mean?
As a person, but not as a critic.
Like, I don't go crazy when he doesn't like a movie. It's like, you know what? He's just saying that because he wants to be different.
Yeah.
The end. I mean, that's all it is.
Let me tell you something, Jamie. I've said this before. I'll say it again. It bears repeating.
Yeah.
If you wonder where film criticism is going to be, certainly on the internet when Ebert dies, I'll tell you where it's going to be, and it's going to seem corny, but it's in us. There is not I will maintain that there is not a single internet reviewer, critic, pundit, whatever, that has not been influenced either consciously or subconsciously by Siskel and Ebert. Their work is alive in everything that we do. Certainly, everything that Jamie and I do is influenced by them in some way. So it's obviously the magic is gone, which is very sad, and again, very corny of me to say, but the style remains because they have influenced our generation and a lot of generations so much. So it's really not going to go away. And I'll tell you something else. I don't want people telling me that the critic is dead, because the critic in my country, this is just from an English perspective, has a very, very important role to play. I'll tell you this. Our film industry is pathetic. Not only is it pathetic, but none of our movies are marketed properly in our own country. When I find out about a great British film, I find out about it the month it's coming out. And how do I find out? I find out from Empire. In the reviews of the month's films, I go through every one. I always look out for the smaller films. You know, even bigger films that we made, like The Queen and In the Loop, I found out about them the month they were coming out. It's true. Queen was pushed in your country. But
yes, it was.
When it came out here, I found out about it literally 2 weeks before it came out from a review in Empire. It was not pushed. Maybe some people would have been lucky enough to catch a trailer of it, but of course they wouldn't have known it was good. That's how I find out about great British films, and even then it's a job to actively seek them out, but that's a whole other thing. But still, that's how I find out about the movies. It's getting back to what Ed was saying. The critic functions as in a very important role, letting us know about smaller movies that are not marketed. The critics create the marketing. They will always do that. And there are always going to be people like us that seek those films out. And so they serve a very important function. Are we blaming all of this on the internet? That's the question I want to know. Is the death of the critic all the internet's fault?
I blame everything on the internet.
Of course.
Well, it's just a convergence of medias coming to the internet. Books.
That's sad. To see people read books on a fucking computer. That's when I go, okay, we got a problem. Like,
what's that thing Amazon has?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. That commercial work.
I love ebooks myself, but again, we talked about that. There's certain books that you really love. You want the physical hard copy. But there's like movies and books that you will read once. Do you really need to buy the hard copy? No. If I can get a soft copy of it and read it,
that's why they have the library.
Yeah, or the library, yeah. So
what's that?
We're getting to that point, Phil. You
but
joke.
That's interesting, Phil, that in Britain you're basically you're saying all your reviews are coming from one magazine.
Yeah, that's pretty much
Total Film.
You don't have any internet sites in Britain that you check for movie reviews that are specifically British?
No, I don't. Well, Empire. No,
we got some colleagues who review in the Britain. I mean, we got some buddies of our, you know, buddies to TMT who do reviews.
Because that is totally different here. I know in the U.S. maybe there's a certain magazines that you guys, but I think Empire is big in the U.S. too. So it's because
of
the magazine period, right? But there's no other movie review magazine that I know of in North America that people say, oh yeah, you got to read this to find out all the good movies. Everybody goes to the internet.
Getting back to your other point, Lou, it's also the fact that our newspapers, we have lots of newspapers and we have lots of film critics, but they only have the space or consciously only cover the big releases, the American releases that are coming out, or movies that have been marketed well in this country, that have been given a big push, movies that are made by Working Title, basically. All those movies, of course, you know, they have big budgets.
Is there any migration of those print writers, critics, to the Empire magazine?
Oh, God, no, they wouldn't have them. They're terrible. I'm sorry. No, a lot of our print critics, I'm afraid, they're just not very good at all. Some of them will make the move, but it won't be to internet. It'll be to television or to radio. It'll start with radio and then it'll
move. They still do radio?
Absolutely. In fact, our best critic in this country, or the one that is most consistently listened to, is a critic called Mark Kermode. I'll send you a link to some of his stuff afterwards, Jamie. It's very, very entertaining. He is a lone wolf, but he is basically our version of Siskel or Ebert. Not in that he apes their style, but in the fact that he has a very, very distinct style of delivering criticism. He has very distinct taste, and he's wonderfully listenable. He is super passionate about movies, and that passion comes through in everything he does. And I believe that that is the function of a critic. We don't listen to them en masse, but we will listen to somebody if they are so passionate about film that we can't help but get wrapped up in it. I was talking to one of our faithful commenters, Welsh Film Buff, about this. His first exposure to Ebert was a review of... Oh, shit, I'm trying to remember what it was that he said. I'll pull it up, but basically it was a review of a movie that he loved, but Ebert hated. And he really, really hated... He said he had passionate feelings about Ebert because of that. Like, what a douchebag. But I said, but he got a reaction out of you. Whatever argument he made, it was intelligent and passionate enough that you got involved, you know, and as a result of that, he listened to more, and he went to the Balcony Archive, and he said he spent 3 days there going
Damn.
Through all the reviews. That's what happens when you have a good critic, and so I just believe that there is a function, no matter what anybody tells me, there is a function for a show to discuss movies on air. There may not be a market for it, but there is a purpose behind it. There is nothing better on television, I believe, than getting two really infectious people talking about movies. We're actually getting that in this country. We have a film discussion show. It's just called Film, and it's called Film 2010. They changed the title, obviously, every year to go with the year. They've just revamped it. And from what they say, they're getting back into that. They're going to have people on there, and they're going to talk about film. They're not going to take you behind the scenes of films or talk about rentals or shit like that. They're going to talk about film, and that's all I want, and I think there's a market for it. I mean, what we do is testament enough, isn't it? I mean, I know at least three people who listen to us, and you guys aren't them, by the way. There's three other people
Damn
who
it.
Listen to
mm-hmm.
us. So I just think there's a market for it,
and
I need to drink now.
that's an interesting situation that you've got over there, Phil. I'm wondering if the other listeners are from other countries, or if there's anybody. I'd be interested. It'd be great if they would comment on what kind of situation they have for their movie reviews. Because I think in North America, I think Canada and U.S., it's pretty well the same. Like, there's no, except for Roger Ebert, there's no real one person that anybody would even know.
Closest is Richard Roper.
Yeah. So it's I don't know where people like again for us who are film fans that search out these reviews. I don't know where the average person goes to get their review anymore, or if they even bother with the reviews, or they just listen to what other people that at the work are saying. Say, oh yeah, you should go see, that's a good movie, and that's all they really need to know about seeing a movie.
Well, that's what it boils down to, really, with any movie.
That's why word of mouth is so valuable still.
Yeah, I mean, the first weekend is about the marketing, and the second weekend is about the word of mouth, and you pretty much know what the word of mouth is going to be off of tracking, like the CineScore and Yahoo Movie Score, whatever the other one is. That gives you the indicator. But yeah, I mean, other than Ebert, I just don't know. You know, which is, you know, as Christina just said, why Inception is I mean, it's only been dropping 30% quadrants every weekend. It has not gone above 40. Still hasn't, as of this weekend, to my knowledge.
I think it dropped 36.
That's, you know, in this day and age with the market the way it is, that's incredible. I mean, just Jesus.
And it's because it's not a... It's not a assembly line type of movie either. It's not a superhero movie. It's not a franchise movie. It's a unique property that just keeps on going, which is
so we get the sequel.
Unbelievable.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. What?
Directed by Brett Ratner.
Inception 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, of course.
Deception.
Nice.
But Inception wasn't a movie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Inception wasn't a movie that people needed critics to tell them to see it. Everyone used to see it. It's because it was a Leonardo DiCaprio film, honestly. And some people, because it was a Chris Nolan.
He's got a spotty track record. I mean, DiCaprio, it's not like, people love the guy, but it's like...
I'm just talking about the people I know. I don't know about your people.
My people, yeah. We'll do lunch. How about that?
I think Nolan was just as big a reason as DiCaprio for people seeing the movie.
I don't know. I've said this before. I think Nolan, because of this movie's success, has now become the name where people know him. I don't know if they knew it before because, hey, he had two very successful, popular Batman movies. But, yeah, it's Batman. I mean, granted, they were sold on his approach, his take on the character. But now with Inception, now they've got the – so if they market Man of Steel and say from Christopher Nolan, that's going to mean something, I think. Whatever he does after.
All I can speak is for the local advertising here, and this is from The Man That Bought You The Dark Knight with Leonardo DiCaprio. So those two guys, I think they were hand-in-hand in the movie.
The marketing. I mean, it was not just saying who's in it. Yeah. The imagery was intriguing. It was a good release date. I mean, certainly the reviews helped people convince people, hey, this is good. I mean, you know.
Good sound effect
but then
in the
why
trailer.
Did that work for Scott Pilgrim?
well, exactly. I mean, Scott Pilgrim's a good movie. It just was terribly marketed. They just sold it to geeks and said, hey, our job's done. We did great because geeks love it.
Interesting question about that, actually.
It's terrible.
Go ahead.
Just an interesting question about that, Jamie. Do you think, because I'm mentioning no names here. Oh, well, of course I am. It's cool news. Who pushed this movie so hard? I think anyone who reads it, basically. And I think it actually put people off. I mean, they immediately started building a resentment towards it because they were like, don't tell me what to think.
I agree with that. But then again, they did the same thing for Inception, didn't they?
But that's such a small percentage of the movie-going population. I mean, that's not why the movie failed, though.
Because it didn't sell the movie-going population. I mean, that's why. Yeah. It's as simple as that. They should go see it while they can because it's a good movie. Go see it on the big screen. But I can't blame people for not going to see it because based on that terrible marketing. You can't call people stupid like, oh, you're just dumb. You won't open your mind. It's like, did you see the trailer? It's terrible.
You guys are calling me dumb because I hated the first teaser.
No, I think the first teaser is good. I think everything that came after that was terrible.
I don't know about the rest.
For the record, Lou, I was joking. It was one of our best shows, actually, where we were joking.
No, you did.
Lou
did say initially he didn't like – I thought – I really liked the first trailer. I did not like the other ones and all the TV
I had no clue what the movie was about.
You said from the start, whatever.
So anyway. And I ended up loving the movie, so there you go.
Exactly. What also it also disproves these jackasses who are just like, you just don't get it. Like, fuck you, asshole.
I knew the voice was coming. I love that voice.
That's what
it is most smile, Mr. Nolan.
If I could say something right quick about the critic problem.
No. Sorry.
something that Phil just said kind of set off the light bulb in my head where you said, don't tell me what to think. I think that right there is the problem with the American general audience and the critics and that disconnect because they feel like critics aren't there to help them. The critics are sitting up in this ivory tower shaking the finger at them saying, how dare you like this movie? How dare you? And whenever a big action movie like Transformers or something makes money, all the press is about, oh, the critics said it was terrible, but the general public, oh, it's such a disconnect. And look at what gets nominated for the Academy Awards. Most of the time it's stuff that most people haven't seen or haven't even heard of. And I think that right there is why people – the general audience doesn't really listen to the critics because their tastes are so different.
I agree. One final point I want to make is that I do, as Ed has said, I go to Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes. If it's a film I'm interested about, like to give you two examples, Toy Story 3 and Jonah Hex, I was very interested to see what all the critics felt about those two movies. But something I found as I read all, and I did read a lot of reviews online about both those films, what I found was that every single review pretty much read the same. And I'm finding that about a lot of movies when I take the time to read through a lot of the reviews. And what that says to me is that there are very few, if any, unique voices on the internet. And those that there are, they're on the websites. Like, we've taken some shots at Ain't It Cool News today, but if Quint or Capone write a review or Massaworm, I'm going to give them the time of day. Because they write well, to me. That's just my opinion. But I'll give them the time to take, because they know how to write well. They know how to suck me in with a good opening sentence. A lot of these critics, they just don't. So yeah. I think it's a lack of talent.
It goes back to Roger Ebert. Everyone thinks they can be Roger Ebert.
Well, I don't, just for the record.
Well, you know what I mean, though.
No, I absolutely. Do you, Jamie? Do you think you could be Roger?
No. I have his weight, but that's about it. I found it.
You don't. He's lying, folks. He's very self-conscious about that, but he's joking. He is. And I've never even seen Jamie, but I have a picture in my head, and it's Slim Roger.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, there you go.
We have there's a distinction now, apparently.
It's more Ebert than Siskel. No, it's more Siskel than Ebert.
What? Okay, there you go. With hair. With hair. Less Ooh. Jewish, too.
And a big cum-catching mustache.
Oh.
I'm sorry, that's not how we're ending the debate, is
Apparently it is how we're ending
Someone's
the debate.
Someone's got an intelligent thing we can say to end this properly.
That was a thick mustache, though.
Oh, Jesus.
That's not a
Jamie. Thanks very much for that.
That is a pimp mustache. That ain't a cum catcher. Don't be saying that about Siskel, dude.
I'm not. I would love a mustache like that, but I can't grow one.
Him and Ebert could have been like an Ebert Siskel in The Bandit, like in the 70s. That's what I think of when I see that picture. The two of them running around trying to like, was it like a Coors Light? They're trying to. I'm a hick, apparently. I'm the only one who knows Smoking the Bandit in this room, apparently.
No, they're trying to sneak. Apparently, trucking cores on the eastern part of the Mississippi was illegal for some reason.
Thank you.
I have no idea why, but...
Because it was the South in the 70s, apparently, because things were different back then.
Okay, somehow cores was good? I never heard of that.
Total movie fiction right there. Sam Adams all the way, ladies and germs. No, maybe a Budweiser. So thanks for listening. That was a good debate, I thought.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting.
We'll keep them coming because the movie news sure ain't helping us.
No, we are in the movie news dead zone right now where everyone's on vacation, summer's wrapping up, and is it Labor Day next weekend or is it the weekend after or whenever?
The weekend.
We get a bank holiday next after. Weekend.
Nice. So you'll, yeah. I don't know, that doesn't help me, but thanks, man.
By the way, folks, if you want to make suggestions of debates we can have, things you want us to talk about, please feel free to leave notes in the comment section. We will listen to everything you say. Want to give a shout out again to our good friends Lighthouse, A to the H, and Welsh Film Buff. Would it shock you to know that I knew this was going to happen? The Welsh Film Buff liked The Expendables. He liked it more than me. But you know what?
Well, I did too.
But I don't listen to what you say.
True.
But that's... But you know what? God bless you. I think I'm not one of those psychopaths that's gonna look you dirty in the eye about that, like Jamie would if you said you like. Go Welsh Film Buff. Say you like I Spit on Your Grave. I dare you, because Jamie's just gonna put a hex on you. That's
I'll
good.
Be like I'll be like Edward Norton on the set of a movie.
Oh, we're just digging in this week. So So thanks very much to everybody and Christina. This has been wonderful. It's been great that the sound quality, I'm telling you, Christina in Dolby Surround Sound 5.1 this week has been absolutely a real treat. So thank you so much, and I hope you can come again.
No problem. I'd love to come back.
Come back anytime. Folks, thanks for listening. Have a great week. We'll see you at the movies, hopefully with more news, or at least with the debate, obviously. Thanks.
I see Scott Pilgrim next weekend, so that's something.
There
and
you go.
And the Avatar extended cut, because I'm a sucker.
Well, it's your money, my friend. I can't argue. It is. It's your money and your 8 hours, so I can't argue. folks, bye. Take it easy.
Bye.
Have a good one, everybody.
Bye.